Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
And now, SCORE senior football analyst Hub Arkish on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Don't you just love that NFL films like music making you so important, Hub? Do you feel important, Hub, the Ubermacher here?
I feel a bit overstated is how I feel.
No, that music says it's impossible to overstate because John Facenda's voice or Harry Gallas's voice would be behind it. And here you are, you're Hub Arkish with that music.
Well, it's good to be with you, I can tell you that, and I enjoy listening to the music, so good to hear.
There you go. All right, so I think I speak for everyone when I say, Sam Darnold? Can you, as the SCORE senior NFL analyst, can you explain what, I suggested he was like Joe Hardy of football, instead of damn Yankees, it's damn Vikings. Like, what happened? He made a deal with the devil? What happened?
Well, I mean, he was never a bad quarterback. He just never became, you know, the all-pro Hall of Fame, you know, franchise quarterback that you hoped when he was drafted, 18, 19 years ago or whatever it was. He's played well on and off. Right now, he is a veteran, a wise veteran, with an excellent defense and a vastly improved running game, who is just doing more than he's done at any prior point in his career. But I wouldn't expect it to stop. I think that's who he is now. The Vikings, their offense still isn't that good. You know, they're still going to have some problems when they get into the tougher part of their schedule. But the bottom line is, it's just a great story right now.
Talking with Hub Arkish, SCORE senior NFL analyst. He's joining me on the guest hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. So I bring up Sam Darnold and the Vikings. They're playing the Lions tomorrow. Vikes 5-0, Lions 4-1. Bears looking up going, we want a piece of that. So is that the game you're most focused on tomorrow, the Bears bye week, or what other games have the greatest interest for you?
Well, it's the game I'm focused on because I think it's just the best matchup this weekend, you know. But I think actually this is probably the best weekend of big games that we've had so far. And that's just because we're getting into, you know, week 7 of the season or whatever. But, you know, Lions and Vikings is a great game. Texans and Packers, you know, at 5-1, 4-2 is a really good game too. And the game of the week is the Super Bowl rematch with the Chiefs and the 49ers. I think the Ravens at the Bucks, you know, a couple 4-2 teams is a really good game. So this is, unfortunately, well, I shouldn't say unfortunately, it doesn't really matter. It happens once every year. The Bears aren't playing. But at the end of the day, this is by far the best weekend so far as, you know, top games to get excited about.
Anything you can learn from Commanders-Panthers? The Bears play the Commanders. They already played the Panthers. Caleb Williams goes home to Washington, D.C., faces the guy picked behind him, and all that going on that we will cover in exhaustive detail next week. What interest does that have for you? What do you think we Bears fans can learn from that?
Well, I think what they should want to learn, and what hopefully we will learn, is that the Bears will continue to improve again a week from tomorrow and continue to move in the right direction. We don't really know how good either one of these teams are so far. They do have two of the easiest schedules in the league through the first 6 weeks, and that is part of it. It's not all of it. They're both playing good football. They're both improved football teams. But whether either of these teams are serious playoff contenders like Houston was last year, I think we'll learn that in the next 2 or 3 weeks. I don't think we know that yet. But this game will tell us a lot about which of these two teams is got a better chance of being more for real.
Bears at 4-2. The last 3 weeks, Caleb Williams has come on. He's played with the big boys, played quarterback. His numbers show he was with the big boys. And the Bears have won 3 in a row for the first time under Matt Eberflus. And the parts that were in question, the offensive line has looked better. And we certainly saw the weapons in the course of these last five games, six games, the weapons in the offense. We saw Keenan Allen have his game. Previously, DJ Moore had his game, DeAndre Swift. So the weapons are being used as needed, and Cole Kmet, special teams player of the week, 2 touchdowns, and this is what it was supposed to look like, and we're still a little surprised that it is against some of the worst defenses. What can they anticipate? What do you anticipate? What do you fear? What do you need to see before you believe this is going to happen against good teams? It just has to happen against good teams?
Well, yeah, that's the most important part. But beyond that, I think the two things you have to realize is that two things have really changed in the last 2 weeks, and they've made a big difference. One is getting Keenan Allen back, because just having him on the field and adding that third special weapon changes everybody on the offense, not just him. It changes him the most, and he has to do the most to produce. But at the end of the day, getting him back is a reason that the offense took off a couple weeks ago and that he had the big game last week. And then the second thing is realizing that they have to feature Cole Kmet, because Kmet, he's not the best tight end in the NFL, but he is a top six, top seven type tight end, which is what you want. And now they're using him like they need to. Forget the snapping the ball. That's nice and that's fun and everything is great. But I'm talking about his play as a receiver. And I think those two changes by Shane Waldron, as well as, you know, this whole thing, I think, about the script and the top 15 plays and all that, I think that was much ado about nothing. You know, it was the only thing that is serious about that is that the communication was there to change it. You know, that the players could talk to the coaches, that the coaches could talk to the players, that Waldron listened and you know, apparently changed a few things. But it's not as if they were losing because they didn't have a top 15 script or something like that. So, you know, at the end of the day, Steve, what's really happening here, the rebuild is continuing. It is where you would want it to be at week 6 of this season, and it now looks like they're moving in the right direction. And the biggest single reason, or two reasons, are Shane Waldron and Caleb Williams, because I couldn't be more impressed with Williams right now and the way he's carrying himself, the way he is running things. Some of the plays he makes are still mistakes. You know, he's a rookie. That's going to happen. But he makes the kind of special plays that only the really good ones make, and we're starting to see him on a weekly basis now. And more than that, I'm going to go back to where I started. His maturity, I just didn't expect this. The way he is leading this offense, leading this team, carrying himself, reacting to things, everything about him, those were the concerns. You know, when people talked about, do you use the number one overall pick, it was questions about those issues. And those issues, I think, and obviously Ryan Poles saw this and knew this, I think those are turning out to be his greatest strengths.
I want to ask about when you talk about the growth of Caleb Williams, the use of Cole Kmet, and what I think is an improved, again, it's against some of the worst defenses in the NFL, but you got to start somewhere, and they're the only team in front of you. The double screen, the fake double screen, I don't even know what you call that, but Caleb Williams faked the screen left, faked the screen right, and found Kmet open in the middle, and it turned out to be a touchdown. Offensive line's got to block for a while to hold that. The offensive line can't be a hole. Even if you influence them, you create sucker holes that guys are going to run through to make the play easier. I thought that was it. That play showed some creativity, some the knowing the moment, and some execution and some on the quarterback's part, and also all of his weapons being in play. I was really impressed with that play. Am I making too much of this? Did you come out of that with any different thoughts?
No, I don't think you're making too much of it at all. And I forget who the broadcaster was, but the TV broadcast, I love the way he called it and explained why the things that seem not even part of the play that Williams did on his first two looks before he went to Kmet and found him wide open is what developed the play. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. The maturity, the ability to read, that is all the exact opposite of the reasons that I don't think Justin Fields is ever going to be a great starting NFL quarterback. I think he's a great person. I think he's a great athlete. I think he probably will still end up starting somewhere for a while. But what separates the top guys from all the rest, because, you know, so many of these guys, what I think I've done the math on this, 83% of the first round draft picks at quarterback have failed in the last 40 years. You know, they don't make it. And the reason is because until you have these guys in your room, on your roster, running your plays, you don't really know what you've got and how to use them. And I think what they're finding out is that they guessed right or I don't know if they guessed, they got it right on Caleb Williams so far.
So where do you put Darnold then? I mean, he's a guy who was, he was third overall. He was a first-round pick. A lot of talk about him. And two teams thought, we want this guy. We like this guy. Hey, we want him back. And he's, you know, steps from backup to all of a sudden he's undefeated. Where in that, in the math you just cited, do you put Sam Darnold?
He's undefeated because the Vikings defense is playing so well and because he and the offense aren't making mistakes. But the offense isn't winning games for them right now, and Darnold isn't winning games for them. What he's doing to win games is not making mistakes to lose games. And we also have to remember, he is 39 years old. He has been in the league, 16, 17, 18 years. He is an NFL quarterback. It's not like, you know, this is shocking, you know, that for 5 weeks or 6 weeks he can play this well. But it's not what anybody expected. But I think what Bears fans need to do, if you want to worry about the Vikings, is start, you know, evaluating the team. Look at the defense. Look at how well they're playing well. Look at how they're running the football, which they couldn't do even 2 years ago when they won, 13 or 14 games. And it's a very good team with a very good coach. They're much improved with some of the changes they've made, really on both sides of the ball. And, you know, I'm not making light of it. Darnold is a huge story, but it's not if he has suddenly become the best quarterback in the league, and that's why they're undefeated right now.
So what do you make of the injury to Aiden Hutchinson? And I was lobbying earlier for the Bears to go get Max Crosby. If you're not going to find an offensive lineman who's a stud out there, and if you wanted to find somebody who could multiply Montez Sweat and help him get bigger numbers, I think you have a ferocity and a terrifying defense. I don't know what the price would be. I don't know what your price limit could be, what Ryan Poles' ceiling would be. But what do you think the chances are? Would you lobby for the Bears to go get Max Crosby?
Well, it would depend on the price, you know, and the price would be steep. But yes, I would lobby for considering it, because that could be the missing link that could take this from a top, what are they really, a top eight defense, a top seven, top nine, I don't know. They're somewhere in that category. You add Max Crosby to that defense, they're the number one defense in the league, or they could be one defense in the league. And so you have to consider it, but then you got to be careful and evaluate, you know, what is the price and can you get it done? But the most important part is, can you get it done? Because yesterday it was announced that Max Crosby is absolutely not available, and Max Crosby has said he doesn't want to leave. So, you know, I know why everybody's talking about it. That's where we get at this point. And I'm not saying the trade won't happen, that he may still get dealt. You know, it's not like it isn't going to happen, but it's highly unlikely to happen. And so I think that if he does become available, the Bears have to be one of the teams that is most interested and considers. But I don't think, from what I'm hearing, that he's going to be moving.
Well, one of the things that I can see has happened during the week, when Max Crosby was honest enough saying, I'm not in for rebuilds. Wherever I want to be, wherever I am, I want to win. And suddenly, you probably have a lot of closed door chatter where they say, Max, shut up. You want to be here. That's what you want. Cause you have no, even if you want out, Max, you want to be here. You have to say that. That's the thing. We're going to say you're not available because we are not kneecapping ourselves. We are not lowering our leverage. So I would argue that's probably what happened the way the events played out. And I think the price would be, it could be ridiculous, but it could be a Montez Sweat price too. Couldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could. And by the way, Steve, you could very well be right. I'm not disagreeing with you. It's just that I think there's so much involved here. And at the end of the day, the important part that could make this interesting is Crosby's not dumb. He's smart enough to know that, yeah, the Bears are in a rebuild, but they're also at the point in the rebuild where he could be the piece that gets him built, you know, that gets it done. And so I don't think going to the Bears because he doesn't want to be in a rebuild, which the Bears are in, would be a negative to him. I think it's all about how much can they get for him. I think that's why they have said he's not available, because they're right, trying to raise the price. And you're not seeing any of these top guys go for number one picks. I mean, you know, go back to the Roshan Smith trade, number two. You know, go back to Sweat, number two. Threes, fours. Nobody's giving up number ones for anything but quarterbacks these days. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think that's what they want to get for Crosby. That's probably what they should get for Crosby. And that may be the game they're playing right now, to see if somebody's going to give them that and more.
Well, if I'm the Bears, I'm happy to give them Carolina's pick, which is a steal of a first round, which should be attractive to the Raiders who are rebuilding. And I'd give them the Justin Fields pick, whether it turns out to be a six or a four. I would think that would be give away somebody else's picks that you've brought in and go from there. And you're not going to find a Crosby in the draft. You're not going to find a guy who's 27. And by the way, Sam Darnold's 27 too. He was drafted in 2018, so he's only 27. But Max Crosby at 27, same age when the Bears got Montez Sweat, same age when they got Khalil Mack. And I do think that there's, with the way the Bears have performed and we see the progress, and I know my head might be over the skis, do you see the same, do you see a or feel a form of, I don't want to say pressure, that's the wrong word, but sort of breathlessness in, we need to do something. We need to win. We need to get to a Super Bowl before the rookie contract is up. The quarterback's rookie contract is up. That seems to be the window where we can get all great things before we have to pay the quarterback. I don't know if you see that coming into play here. Do you?
Not now. I mean, they control him for four more years, you know, and if it's going to take 4 years to get to a Super Bowl, he may not be the right guy. So I think that'll happen eventually. I think that comes probably year three, you know, year four. But for right now, they know where they're at. They know they've got time. They are closer than anybody expected them to be at this point to starting to compete right now. And so, no, I don't think that would be an issue. I think that, you know, the question is, what additional pieces do they have to add? Maybe right now, but definitely in this next offseason, to be a legit Super Bowl contender next year, because that would be a pretty decent, you know, development of the rebuild that they're trying to do.
All right. Go team. We love it. We want to trade. Bring in Max Crosby. It was so much fun when Montez Sweat got here, so I want more. I'm here for more. I'm here for the fun, Hub.
Well, you know, you see, one quick thing, though. The thing that Poles has done the best that people don't talk about is that while he has dramatically improved this team in the last year and a half, he's also controlled the roster. He's still in really good space, you know, cap space-wise. They're going to have among the most room in the league next year at the end of this season. And so you just don't want to give up too much. You're not at the point yet where you're willing to overpay for a Crosby or somebody else because you think this is the year, you know, because it's not. And one player isn't going to change that. It might get him one playoff win, you know, but just don't overpay for whatever additional additions you want to make. And I think one of the best things Poles has done is he hasn't really overpaid for anything yet. Except Cole Kmet. Not that Cole Kmet, but the wide receiver he screwed up.
well, yeah, Chase Claypool. Well, we'll keep track, and we'll look forward to Bears Commanders next week. Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams. I look forward to talking to you about that, Hub.
That will be fun. I'll look forward to it, too. You have a great week, Steve.
Thanks. Habarkish scores NFL, senior NFL analyst. There you go. By the way, this broadcasting note to all Americans and all the ships at sea. The Score has you covered with great football action all weekend. Tonight, number one, Texas hosts number five, Georgia in a big SEC showdown. Pregame coverage begins at 6. Then tomorrow, you can hear Jaguars versus Patriots from London starting at 8:15 a.m. Then Jets at Steelers on Sunday night. Sunday night football starting at 6:30. All of it can be heard on the Score and the Odyssey app. Take a break when we come back. We're going to do a little Sesame Street. B is for Bears. S is for Sox. BS. There's a lot of it. I'll tell you about it. Next on Saturday Suckage, I'm Steve Rosenblum, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Welcome in, welcome back. Saturday Suckage, I'm Steve Rosenblum. Tyler Farrell, he is our... Essentially, he's our Steve Kornacki of Saturday Suckage web polls. So, break it down for us. We had a web poll. So, share with the class the question, the choices, and where we stand, right? We didn't even tell people where to go, and they knew right where to go. So, where should they go, Tyler? Let's start with that.
Where should you go? Well, you can go to @670thescore on X. Look at one of the latest posts. I have it up as Steve Rosenblum at you wants to know, who do you hate watch more?
And what are the choices we are giving these fellow suckageers this Saturday?
That's right. Option number one, Aaron Rodgers' Jets.
Mm-hmm. It's a good one.
Option number two, Jerry Jones' Cowboys.
It's a good one.
It is a good one. Option number three, the Packers.
Mm.
And option number four, Jerry Reinsdorf's White Sox.
Mm. And so, who's leading?
Not much of a change on the lead front, although the Packers still hold a 16% lead. Jerry Reinsdorf's White Sox has closed in a little bit. They are now up to 25%. So Packers 41.7, Jerry Reinsdorf's White Sox at 25%, Aaron Rodgers' Jets at 21.5%, and Jerry Jones' Cowboys are nearly at 12%. They're trending at 11.8 right now.
So you go to on X to @670thescore, and you go, how many people have voted? How many votes have we had in the last half hour?
Right now, it is showing 331 votes.
Hate watching really gets to people, so let us know who you're hate watching. Text us, 312-644-6767. This is Southside Pete, 773 texter, with a Wake and Bake Club update. I will have an update in about an hour or so. But this one is Cub Scouts are pots. Oh, my God. Let's try this in English. Cub Scouts spotted outside dispensary selling cookies and candies at Ainsley and Clark in Chicago. Definitely a good idea. The customers at the dispensary will have the munchies. Yeah. In fact, I do recall, did I recall a story a couple of years ago that Girl Scouts were outside outside dispensaries when it was Girl Scout cookies time? So, yeah, I would do that. We have Wake and Bake Club with audio, and you won't want to miss it. It's a pretty classic thing. We'll do that in a little while. But first, we were talking about the second place in the web poll about hate watching, Chairman Reinsdorf's White Sox. The story this week. I mean, it certainly is in the news. Aaron Rodgers in the news. The Packers are always in the news. Jerry Jones is telling lecturing radio people, you don't ask me those questions. Jarrah, I don't think you understand the object of the exercise. You come on the radio, you get asked a question. No, I'll get different people to ask me questions. All right. Clearly failed at that. A story about Chairman Reinsdorf open to selling the White Sox. You know, if that's a bluff, and it has the stink of a bluff, open to selling the team, the new owner might take the team out of town, oh my God, oh no. Then you go, wait, are the Sox bluffing any better or any worse than Kevin Warren and his Bears? So you got your B for Bears, you got your S for Sox, you got BS. That's what's going on here. Kevin Warren says he wants to stay in the city. We love the lakefront. But I think he wants Arlington Heights, and that's why he's bluffing. Any sane person would want Arlington Heights because of the riches it gives the Bears. They own the land, the control it offers. And this looks like using the lakefront as all that talk to pressure the school districts in Rolling Meadows and Palatine and Arlington Heights, using this to have them pressure to accept the Bears' terms for crapping out on property taxes that support schools. Why does Kevin Warren hate schools? That's not very American. Why does Kevin Warren hate education? Why does he want to keep people dumb? Probably so he can get a sweet deal, I would guess. He says he wants to pay his fair share. Okay, dude, having property taxes capped means you might not pay your fair share. So just pay your fair share, and that'll be it. And there you go, dude. The White Sox chairman, meanwhile, is playing a little different, a little similar game, you know, but the only game he really knows. All right, we're going to move. I get my stadium, or I'm just going to sell it. Guess what? Somebody will take it out of town. So you're trying to convince, you're not putting money up. Even the Bears are putting money up. You're not putting money up to convince people to spend, convince people to give the worst team in baseball, maybe the worst organization in baseball, a shiny new stadium and everything it wants. Okay, so let's recap. The chairman is failing at baseball, failing at broadcasting, and failing at negotiating a new stadium deal. Strike three, grab some bench. If he says he's going to sell to somebody, somebody will take the team out of town. So what? I mean, maybe he will, maybe he won't. Who knows? Chicago can't be that sucker. Let Nashville be that sucker. Although I think the Nashville mayor has indicated he won't be that sucker. We're not giving you all these riches. We're not. Cities with any vision and foresight have told you new stadiums don't do anything for them except they make the rich richer. And they're painful to the taxpayers. Nashville seems to have learned that and seems to be approaching it that way. Chicago, and you got Mayor Brandon Johnson, who, boy, he desperately needs a friend, right? And he's saying, I haven't talked to Chairman Reinsdorf about this, but he needs some skin in the game. You come to the table with something. That means bring money. So you're going to hear stuff. Kevin Warren's kind of done that about this. He'll throw around the phrase world-class city. And you'll hear people from the White Sox, people defending the teams, people who want to encourage the city to give us money, is talking about pride in Chicago. Make us, we're world-class. We're not. You know what? It's such crap.
I'm a stadium nerd, I would say.
Mm-hmm. You're going to hear the puppets mimic those talking points. Bring people back to Chicago. Make it a draw. When you hear that, bring this up. Perhaps you have heard of Condé Nast Traveler, premier traveler's magazine. It's world famous. Talks about traveling all over the world. Perhaps Kevin Warren and the chairman should know of it. Chicago is named the best big city in the U.S. by readers of Condé Nast Traveler for the eighth consecutive year. Unprecedented recognition. And this was as of October 1st of this year. Choose Chicago, the city's official tourism agency, announced that Chicago has once again been named best big city in the U.S. in the Condé Nast Traveler's Reader's Choice Awards. And this isn't just like three people. This is over 500,000 people. 575,000 readers voted their favorite destinations, and they chose Chicago as the best big city in the U.S. for the eighth straight year. Wait, people are coming to Chicago? I thought they wouldn't come here unless the Bears got a stadium. And by the way, as Choose Chicago, the city tourism agency, points out, this follows a spectacular summer for the city. Visitor Chicago filled a total of 3.4 million hotel room nights over the summer months, June, July, August. That's 5% more than last year. Anchored by the Democratic National Convention and other major conventions, group hotel room demand totaled 1.1 million room nights, 7% higher than last year and exceeding 2019 levels pre-pandemic. Wait, so we got more people visiting and we got more conventions here and more demand for rooms. The Choose Chicago release goes on to say it was also a strong summer for leisure travel, with events like Lollapalooza and NASCAR Chicago Street Race contributing to 2.3 million leisure room nights, 4% more than last year. The strong summer of hotel demand drove all-time records in summer hotel revenue and city tax revenue, both measures 13% higher than 2023. Summer season also welcomed over 671,000 international visitors to Chicago, a gain of 11% compared to last year. Most notably, Canadian summer visitation was up 21% during the summer months. All those numbers, speaking to the wonderful visitation numbers, the tax numbers, filling room numbers. Nobody apparently needed a stadium for the worst team in baseball to come to Chicago. Those numbers tell you travelers don't need a new stadium for the richest league in the world to visit our city. We seem to be doing fine without giving in to the Bears begging and the Sox begging and the Bears and Sox sanctimony, mostly the Bears sanctimony. And there you go. You see Kevin Warren trying to run a bluff, and what I think is a bluff. And you see the chairman trying to run a bluff, and the 78, look at that. Hey, here's our baseball field in it. If you build it, they will look. And yeah, okay. And here's the trip down the river to people who could be influenced by it. We're going to come on our boat. Imagine you are chairman of the White Sox and you spent more money making an imaginary field than you did on hiring a real general manager. And now you want real money from everybody, or you're going to move. You pony up money. We could crowdfund Uber if that's what you want to do. I'm Steve Rosenblum. You know what? There's a quarterback for the Bears who looks like he'll be the quarterback for the Bears for a long time. And there are some exceptional, almost the laugh-inducing numbers, giddiness that should go along with this. We'll run them down next on Saturday Suckage. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
God really kissed downtown, you know, Chicago with that lake front.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Indeed it is Saturday Suckage. I'm Steve Rosenblum. Thanks for joining me. Top of the hour, Aaron Lemming will be here, 24/7 Sports and SB Nation. We will talk Bears. We're going to talk Bears in a moment. I just wanted to catch up on the web poll and the last part of the discussion. 224 texter, the Sox are so bad that people hate them too much to even hate watch. That's really good. So we have a web poll up, and it is, who do you hate watch? Who do you hate watch most? Who do you love hate watching? So Tyler Farengel, we're going back to the Steve Kornacki board. Where do people find this, and what are our choices, and where do we stand?
That's right. You can go to at 670 The Score on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it. It is the second latest tweet from the account. Steve Rosenblum wants to know, who do you hate watch more? Option number one, Aaron Rodgers' Jets. Option number two, Jerry Jones' Cowboys. Option number three, the Packers. And option number four, Jerry Reinsdorf's White Sox.
And
not much change still. The Packers currently are leading at 41.3%. Number two, Jerry Reinsdorf's White Sox at 24.9%. Number three, Aaron Rodgers' Jets at 21%. And number four, Jerry Jones' Cowboys at 12.8%.
How many votes do we have?
366.
All right, so go to X and you can answer our web poll and we'll get an answer by the end. Another text, 847, Cutler got a DUI. If that wasn't included in suckage, it would be a crime. Yes, well, Jay Cutler got a DUI, tried to bribe the guy he rear-ended that ended up with police finding out he was drunk and slurring his words and carrying guns. One was a loaded Glock, so yeah. But I do believe that the fact that he got the DUI makes him the front runner to be the next Sox manager. We'll see if we find that out this week. So there are the Bears bye week and what they've done by winning their three games in a row and winning them so huge and so has led to this onslaught of numbers that some are really laughable. Here's the one I like best. That from the Twitter account of the 33rd team, the last time the Bears scored five or more offensive touchdowns in back-to-back games was 1956. And that year, the NFL had 12 teams. The NFL-AFL merger wouldn't be announced for 10 years. Joe Montana was born. Dwight Eisenhower was president. A bottle of soda cost a nickel. Yahtzee, Play-Doh, and Cocoa Puffs were invented. 1956. So there are all kinds of other numbers. Most specifically, the reason you called was, what about that Caleb Williams guy? Clay Harbor, who had been a guest with me and Hub when we did a Labor Day show, and he's a former NFL tight end with Philly, Jacksonville, New England, Detroit. He tweeted out, just saw this stat. Caleb Williams' 79% completion percentage is the highest game mark in league history by a rookie, with 25 or more attempts and four or more passing TDs. 79%. I was talking with Hub earlier. You heard that it's his command of the offense and command of all of his weapons. They're all there. Whatever game, whatever's open, whichever weapon the opponent doesn't want to cover, he's going to find them. Bill Zimmerman, who's the senior executive producer at Odyssey Sports and deputy editor at Windy City, WC Gridiron, You Better You Bet, he looked at another metric to show Caleb Williams' growth. And he used QBR, quarterback rating. So weeks 1 through 3, Caleb Williams was 28th. Weeks 4, 5, 6, inclusive. Number one is Jared Goff. Number two, Joe Burrow. Number three, Jaden Daniels. Number four, CJ Stroud. Number five, Caleb Williams. So two guys ahead of him are guys that Ryan Poles passed on and took Caleb Williams. He's gone from 28th to 5th. I mean, in those 3 week stretches, 1 through 3 and then 4 through 6. And obviously the comparisons with Jaden Daniels taken behind him. We're going to get all of that next week because the Bears go to D.C., Caleb Williams' hometown, and they play the Commanders. Caleb, Jaden, number one. Number two, Jaden Daniels is 4th in the NFL and 1st among rookies with a season passer rating of 107.1. He's well ahead of Caleb Williams, 88.7. But Williams has renewed the gap. Williams was considerably lower earlier, and he got better. He got more weapons. He found more weapons. He is offensive coordinator. Started scripting stuff, started making the most of the weapons he has. Caleb Williams has narrowed the gap. Daniels is at narrowed the gap in passing yards. Daniels is at 234 on average. Caleb Williams 219.5. And Caleb Williams has 9 touchdown passes. Daniels has 6. So you're seeing growth. You're seeing growth from Caleb Williams. First Bears quarterback to have 3 consecutive games of 100 passer rating or more since, do Do you know who last did it? Tyler Farrengold? Do you know?
I do not. Who did it last?
Three consecutive games of a passer rating of 100 or more. Last done in 2013 by Josh McCown. Not even the aforementioned arrested Jay Cutler. Josh McCown.
Wow.
Three in a row. Now, rightfully, you look at it, again, all these Caleb Williams numbers, you're looking at some of the worst defenses in the league, but that's exactly the way the schedule played out. That's who you play. That's what you have to do. It's one thing to say this is a team we should kick the snot out of. It's another thing to actually do that, to actually kick the snot out of that team, a team begging to have the snot kicked out of it, and that's what they've done. They get credit for that. And our next guest, I'll take a break, top of the hour, Aaron Lemley will be here. He points out that while you're talking about all the Bears cupcakes now, you know, they're playing these horrible teams, and what's going to happen when they get to the division, well, there's some more bad teams coming up, and then they get to the division, and then, well, nobody knows. If they say they know, they're lying. But we'll see what Aaron Lemming as an observer has to say, and we'll discuss more about the Bears, Caleb Williams, playing good football. It's just, look, we're not used to this. We're not used to good football and a quarterback and a guy who knows what he's doing on a consistent basis. We have to get used to that. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage. Thanks for listening. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.